I have great pleasure now in welcoming my next guest, who is the man, the myth, the legend, Lincoln legend, that is Ron Booth. Welcome, Ron Booth.
Thank you very much, Jo, for inviting me. It seems as though my infamy has arrived before me.
Oh, I think infamy is better tagged as notoriety.
Yeah. Well, I have a passion for what I do.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. Now, you are not just a writer, are you? You are a publican as well in the city.
I go to lots of events. I'm photographed with lots of people. In fact, Frankie Barton once said to me on Facebook, when there was pictures up of me at different events, that I'm omnipresent. So it made me laugh, and I probably ought to write a poem about that.
I think that would be making a good topic.
Yes, yeah.
But that brings you on to being infamous again, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, in a good way.
Yeah.
I started writing late. Everybody is a closet writer and they tend to keep things to themselves. But it wasn't until I retired to look after my wife and I took redundancy, got involved with the writers group to give me another outlet. And then in that writers group, the person running it, Steve Court, also ran a spoken word event, open mic, at the Jolly Brewer, mm-hmm. Which is on Broadgate. And it was a monthly event. I went along to it, plucked the courage up to do a few things, and just got bitten by the bug. And then I kept doing that, and then in January 2015, a new member came to the writers group. Her name was Gemma Baker. Mm-hmm. And at that time, she was very quietly spoken. She's quite gregarious now with how she is. And we got on quite well. And I'd mentioned to her about wanting to travel to different open mics because I'd seen things on YouTube of what the standard was like out there. I'd asked the other people within the writers group and nobody seemed that interested. So for the best part of a year, Gemma and I travelled several times a month to different events, got bitten by the bug. And then in the October of that year, we met up with a poetry collective called A Firm of Poets. Mm-hmm. They came out from Wakefield, Rotherham Way. And they had been funded by the Arts Council to do a 38-date tour of the UK called the People's Republic of Poetry. So when I saw that being advertised, at that time the Cass Theatre in Doncaster had only newly opened, and they were holding it in one of the studio rooms. But when I asked Gemma if she wanted to go, I said, I'll book tickets. And it mentioned about doing a spoken word workshop. And so I said, are you up for going to that? Because we would have to be there for 3 o'clock. So they've got the afternoon, few hours of doing that, and then in the evening, their performance. So we went to do that. We walked into the room, and we were surprised to see there was only 9 other people there.
Oh, no.
Well, we said to them, because the collective was Ralph Dartford, Matt Abbott, unfortunately, I can't remember the other names, but they stick out. Mm-hmm. And they said to us, oh, we limit it to 9 people because you're taking part in tonight's performance. So cut a long story short, the first half was 4 of them on stage, or I think there was 5, mm-hmm. getting up and doing poems throughout that first half. And then on the second half, it was us 9 sat on chairs and We'd rehearsed what we wanted to do. We'd had a little bit of critique in the day, had a break, come back, and then performed it again in front of the people tutoring us. And then on the night, the fact that it was sold out, it was a small studio room of 50 people, but really first time in front of a big audience. And it was that buzz that you get. And we, travelling home, we were like up there in the stars. We were just so buzzed up. And then Gemma came up with the idea to start off Mouthpiece Poets. And that lasted for a while, and we had some gigs at the Drill Hall, as it was then. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that collective broke up within a year, as collectives can do. And so I, with a group of other people, went to set up another collective called Outspoken Poets. But we had a meeting and agreed to set up events, but whoever sets them up, nobody else interferes. If it fails or succeed, it's down to that. And I chose the Birdcage as my venue. It was newly opened, and from day one I was blessed with an audience, and we're still going today.
Is it the same audience?
No, the audience does revolve. You do get the same people that do come back, but not always every month. And I've often thought if they all turn up on the same night, we won't get them
stuck.
But the thing is, we're recording this here at the university. The university has been a great focal point, and we have a lot of students that come along, because it is a platform for people to come along, see if they like it, because most people worry that they're going to be up against consummate performers and there's going to be a big ego, but there's none of that. I'm not a control freak, but I meet and greet, I compare, I do everything. So everybody who comes along, whether you're a newbie or a consummate performer, everyone's welcome and treated the same.
Yeah, I think that's important as well for somebody who's not been before or who tentatively wants to dip their toe in, to know that you're going to be there, you will greet them, you will treat them the same as you treat everybody else.
Yes, absolutely. And the Birdcage is run by Rachel and Chris Brooke. But Chris is more the financier of it. Rachel is the face of the Birdcage. She puts her heart and soul into it. And what it has become is an independent pub that is a community hub for people to try lots of different events on there. They have quiz nights, they have DJ vinyl nights, they have live bands. And I accidentally got drawn into doing a bingo event, which is only once every 3 months, called Innuendo Bingo.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
It is, but it's for an adult audience.
I was going to say, it's Sunday lunchtime, so we'll perhaps skim over the surface of that.
Yeah.
And I tell you what I would like now. I would like to hear some of your poetry, please.
I did mention before about a poem, and you was asking me how you get inspiration, whatever. In August of 21, as the pandemic was easing off and the restrictions were being lifted, myself and a friend went to London to see a friend of ours called Frizz Frizzle. He's known as the Song Ruiner. He lives in Nottingham now, but he was performing at St. James's Palace Theatre Club. And so we were there on a trip to surprise him. And then the following day, because we stayed overnight, my friend wanted to go and see a show. I mean, it'd been so long with the pandemic. So I'd said, I don't mind, you know. So she came up with this thing, everybody's talking about Jamie. I knew nothing about it, But it was a musical, and I like musicals, so we went, booked a matinee performance. And as it was coming up to the closing part of the first half, because Jamie is a young 16-year-old boy, and he wants to be a drag artist. And during the story, he's plucked up the courage to meet drag artists and also a famous drag artist who runs a shop that sells the clothes and the shoes. And as it's coming to the end of the first half, he's been picked the stuff up, and then on the way home, he was bullied. As he walks into the house, head bowed down with his dress over his arm, shoes on his dangling on his fingers, his mother says, "Oh, Jamie, what's wrong?" He says, "I don't think I can do this anymore." And she said, "But it's your dream. It's what you've wanted to do." And he said, "I'll do it tomorrow." And she came up with this fantastic line that I just had to write down. She said, "Don't wait for tomorrow, be happy today." And I wrote it down. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, I wrote this poem that I'm going to read for you now.
Okay.
It ended up being called "Life is a Gift." Don't wait for tomorrow, be happy today. Life is a gift, don't waste it away. Regrets are choices we didn't make, and all the chances we didn't take. Experience life in the moment, as that's where it's lived. In one fleeting moment, your life can be gone. A lifetime of regrets will flow through your head. Life cannot be lived when you are dead. So keep this message as a rhyme. Repeat it over time after time. The clock keeps ticking, it doesn't stand still. Don't wait for tomorrow, be happy today. Life is a gift, don't waste it away.
Excellent. And never a truer word spoken, I feel.
Yeah, well, it's amazing where you get inspiration. And I would advise anybody who writes, they probably do it anyway, but whether you read something, a line that catches, or like on TV programs, write that down in a notebook, because you never know when sometime in the future that line can be crucial to fitting in with the poem that you've got.
Brilliant. Well, that's advice, isn't it?
Well, it's learned behaviour, I think, because other people told me that's what they do. So
brilliant. So it's not copying, that's the wrong word.
No, you're not plagiarising. It's what it did, and the only way I can describe it, and I'm sure people who do write and are inspired by things, it's like a bell goes off in your head. Mm-hmm. Because you're only borrowing that line and you're fitting it in with your original piece of artwork.
Yeah.
You know,
fantastic stuff. And it also, it gives you something to focus on, doesn't it?
It does, but it doesn't. The words don't always come easy.
Nice.
Sometimes, I mean, I was lucky with that one, and it's probably about only the fourth or fifth poem I've written, where when you get that thing with words are just tumbling in your head, and you get up, you write down, and I didn't have to edit it at all. Mm. You read them several times, and then you have to let somebody else read it. Is that okay? You know, and I've been lucky, but I do like the editing process. I mean, with the more difficult ones, sometimes you have to go back to them several times. And Leonard Cohen, the great Leonard Cohen that everybody has probably heard about, he always said that everything you write is a work in progress. And he had one famous poem which started off as a song, then a poem, then a song again. It's called "A Thousand Kisses Deep." You can trace it on Google of how over the 11 years he worked, kept altering it. But he came to London, the O2 Arena, when it became a venue for mm-hmm. hosting things like that. I think it was in 2002. It's on the album that they recorded from that, but you can find it on YouTube. And he'd really ripped the guts out of it, and the only thing that he kept in it was a repeating line that goes through the poem, "A Thousand Kisses Deep." And to me, it's a masterpiece. So if you go on YouTube, just put in Leonard Cohen, O2, mm-hmm. London, and for some reason they've titled it Recitation.
Not A Thousand Kisses.
No, but you can find the songs on there as well. Mm-hmm. And the song is totally different from the poem, but it just shows you how a work can evolve and become... I mean, when I go to spoken word events, I do like to read sometimes other people's poems, and that is one that I do. And I make it clear it's not me, it's Leonard Cohen. But it's perfect to me. It's just so heartfelt.
It speaks to you.
Anybody listening, look it up on YouTube or Spotify, the album's on there, but it will be under Recitation.
Okay. When did you actually start writing?
Well, many years ago. I mean, when I first met my wife-to-be, she was the first person that I wrote poems for.
Yeah.
You know, and so it wasn't really until many, many years later, because I had different jobs throughout that period, and life takes over. You have a family and everything. So it wasn't until my wife, I became a carer for my wife.
Yeah.
And I took voluntary redundancy in 2011. And then I joined Facebook. And I came across a newly accredited mindfulness coach in Australia. He was going to do an event called Mindful May, do a daily teaching. And because at that time I felt like I was going through a period of depression, and I did see the doctor who put me on... I can't remember the name of it now, but it did help. Mm. But I'm not a big believer of being on medication full-time unless you need it. And that helped me. But advice he gave me was, you need to find an outlet from what you're doing at home. So I went up in the attic. I thought, oh, I used to like poetry and reading and that. So I got one of the big boxes, brought it out the attic. Lots of great poetry books there, you know, Thomas Hardy and different people. And as I took the books out, in the bottom was several journals. And when you open up something you probably haven't seen for 30 years, and then you look and you think, did I write that?
Yeah.
a few of them didn't seem complete, so I had a go at trying to finish them.
Mm-hmm. Did it work?
Yeah, the only way I can describe it is, you know, when maybe when you were younger and you maybe had a pair of shoes, a piece of clothing, and your mother kept chucking it out, but you kept retrieving it because it was so comfortable to wear. Soon as I started that, that's how it felt, so comfortable. So then, with being on Facebook, I found Lincolnshire Creative Writers, joined them, and then, as I mentioned earlier, Steve Court, who was running that, also had the spoken word open mic at the Jolly Brewer, which unfortunately isn't going now because it got taken over as Bentley's Bar.
Yep.
But the guy who owns the property, he said it will open again. So maybe again, because that used to be a great community hub as well in Lincoln.
Back in the day, as they
say. Yeah, so that's how I got started, really.
Okay. Now, I've interviewed a couple of people who've mentioned your name. I don't know if you're aware, obviously you are aware of him, Dan Kame.
Oh, yeah, Daniel Kame was a guest at my event on Caged at the Birdcage, which is on the first Wednesday of every month, which is a tagline I use, because he's a fabulous classical guitarist and innovative with what he does.
Yep.
And so I asked him if he'd like to be a special guest, because we have a special guest every month and they get paid for doing a 30-minute set.
Brilliant. But the reason I mentioned Dan is because obviously he writes songs, but he doesn't write words.
Right.
Is that something that you're quite keen to try, writing songs with, or writing the words for songs?
It's funny you should mention that. No, not in a bad way or a naughty way or anything. Last year, I don't know if you've heard of Martin Buick. He owns Playing Aloud Studios. Recently, last Saturday at the Labour Club, they held a 10-year anniversary party for Playing Aloud Studios. He records lots of musicians. But anyway, last year, we're in the Birdcage, both just talking to each other. He looked a bit down in the dumps. I think I was feeling a bit. And as we engaged in conversation, we had one thing in common. A person, not the same person, but we both had a lady friend who had suddenly started ghosting. And I'd never heard of the word ghosting before. So we had a conversation about that.
Yeah.
And then a week later, Martin had put something up by Gemma Baker, I mentioned earlier, and he'd taken one of her poems and turned it into a song.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I heard it and commented on it, he said, "Oh, I've been threatening to do that with one of yours." So I said, "I tell you what, I'll write you something specific." So I did write a piece called Answer Me, which could be done as a poem or it can be done as the song. He's recorded three versions of it now. He's looking to finalise it, but considering he's a busy guy, he's doing all this in his spare time, you know, because he's putting his whole effort into running it as a business.
Yeah.
But this one is one that I did write for that female friend.
Okay.
And we met up for coffee a couple of years ago at the lawn, and we were outside in beautiful sunshine. And she'd been to the go to the hairdressers, but she did this thing where she splayed her fingers and ran them through her hair. And I couldn't get that image out of my head. It was so wonderful. So I wrote a poem about that called Your Hair. Fingers splayed on both hands, you ran them through your hair and took my breath away at a magical sight to behold. With golden rays of sunlight shimmering on every strand as fingers run through hair. Let me run my fingers through your hair and lightly caress your face. You know this is just my imagination getting the best of me, but maybe someday it will happen and become reality. Instead of being just another wild fantasy, wishing dreams came true. Dreaming upon a dream is a wonderful thing to do, because it would be nice when they do come true.
That was lovely.
Thank you. Well, it was heartfelt.
Yes.
Again, it just shows you where you can get inspiration.
Yeah.
You can get it from words, you can get it from an action that somebody's doing.
Yeah.
And because she was what I would term a really good special friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so you write your emotions and feelings, you know.
Brilliant. not everybody's got that ability that can to be able to put things into words, though, have they?
Yeah, well, some people say that. I mean, you can learn that. I mean, I don't know. I think I've discovered that when I did start writing again, that in some way I've been gifted the gift of words. And as I explain to people, when I write things down, and with the ones that I have to edit, because you don't always get them come out perfect, the way I see it is like a jigsaw puzzle. And you're often rearranging words until it fits, and then you just seem to know when to stop.
Yeah.
Because it is best not to over-edit things. But if you do editing, always keep a copy of the original.
Yes.
so that you can go back to it if you're editing and what you've taken out.
I think I'd be find it very difficult to edit, because that means cutting up your own work to all intents and purposes, doesn't it?
It is, but it's also a very satisfying experience when you've done that and you've added other pieces in, because sometimes, as I tell some of the students that come to my event and anybody who writes, is when you're writing, just concentrate on the writing. Don't punctuate or anything. You can do all of that afterwards. The main thing is to get something down on paper, then maybe leave it for a day or two, go back to it, read it, and then edit the bits that you want. And that is the way that I work, and I think most people who write work never concentrate at the time you're writing on the final part of punctuation and everything.
So that's a lesson for everybody in writing.
Well, yes, it is. It's something that we learn over time, and it's only by sitting down, writing, and then if you have the courage to share it with other people, get their views. I believe, and I think Leonard Cohen mentioned it once in an interview, that when you've written and performed something, then it no longer belongs to you. It belongs to the audience, you know, so they can critique it in whatever way or take from it what they want. Because quite often things that you write, particularly if they're a little bit ambiguous, it means to that person reading or listening to it whatever's happened in their life at the time, so you can get different levels of meaning.
Yeah.
In actual fact, I did do a poem a number of years ago, which I have got in my book here, but I purposely wrote to be ambiguous, because there is a very famous poem by Robert Frost. It's called The Road Not Taken. And if you Google it, look it up, it's one of the most studied poems that people do in, like, writing classes, literature and whatever. And when I did an event for there was a group from the university who did an event called Sloth Events. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I haven't, no.
Yeah.
Sounds fun.
But Guy Mankowski, who I know, he was one of the guests on there. So what they had on the first part of it, it was held at Coffee 200 a couple of years ago now. And they had students on the first half and then guests they'd invited to take part. And I was lucky enough to have been asked. Guy was the main headliner on the event. And so I thought, because I'm going to do something in front of students, I need to make it seem worthwhile and make people think. And I think I introduced it in the way that words are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They can make you laugh. They can make you cry. They can also make you think. And sometimes, as I described earlier, poems are meant to be ambiguous. And you've no need to dissect them. It's what it means to you at that time of hearing it.
Well, I think we'd better hear that then,
don't
you?
It's a very short poem. And this one, I'll not... I used to explain how I wrote it, but because it is really meant to be ambiguous, there's no description. It's called I Am a Voice. I am a voice. I am alone, dying in the darkness. I used to shout for help, but then I couldn't tell if words were coming out through my mouth or was it a voice in my head, and it scared me. I am alive, yet I see nothing and feel nothing. The darkness is like something solid. It's inside me. I am a voice in the dark, a quiet voice, and you hope it won't turn silent, the voice you want to keep hearing, because then you know you're still alive. I have no name. There are no names here in the darkness. No one else is here, only you and me. I know who I am. Do you know who you are? I am a voice in the dark calling out for help. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. I heard people shouting. It sounded far away in the darkness. Voices saying, survived, alive, breathing. I wanted to shout back, yes, help, help me. Then I thought, don't be stupid. So I didn't answer, and the voices went away. If I can hear voices shouting, and I'm a voice here in the darkness, does that mean I'm a ghost?
Ooh, eerie. That leaves us all thinking. Well, it leaves us all thinking.
Well, as I said, words are powerful, and it's whatever somebody wants it to mean or whatever experiences they've been through up to that point.
Ron, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this afternoon. Thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome, and it's been a pleasure to be part of your show.
Thank you.
And I hope you get some feedback from the students. And if you do, tell them about Uncaged at the Birdcage. It's an open mic
You've
platform.
You've just done it. Wednesday of every month.
Yeah, it's for comedy sketches, short stories, spoken word.
Mm-hmm. You've just done it, Ron.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been a star.